Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Pellegrini Financial Investment Planning Council fourth quarter conference call. Hindsight is 2020. I would like now to turn the meeting over to Mr. Ryan Malcolm. Please go ahead, Mr. Malcolm.
Thank you, operator, and sorry, everyone, for that little delay. Hopefully, some of you have stuck around to stay with us here. And, yeah, we are into our fourth quarter conference call, and do want to start kind of with more of a general overview, I guess, of the past decade as we're now into the new 2020s or the roaring 20s, perhaps, of yesteryear. And just want to touch on a couple major topics and some of those things from, and I guess looking back, hindsight, of course, is 2020 and looking over this last decade. We did see certainly gains across the boards on all stock indices, and with really the U.S. being the most dominant of them all. And, you know, probably where we saw, you know, certainly gains throughout all sectors and most economies globally. And keeping in mind, of course, that's following up where in the 08-09 financial crisis, markets started from quite the downside. And also the fact that in that 2000-2010 decade, the indices were generally basically flat across the board, even hanging down a little bit in some respects. And so this past decade, of course, was the exact opposite of that. And that's obviously a good thing from a portfolio review and performance standpoint. But also, I think a couple of things that stood out was, especially to economists, was probably the low interest rate environment that still lags or continues on to today. And the low inflation rate that, you know, through the 10 years of a bull market and 10 years without a recession, inflation has still been very low and into the lower bounds, I guess, of central banks' ranges, but really it's been a battle to get much inflation from anything. And so that's, you know, when we're looking back, of course, we saw a lot of positive trends, and if you look at the past decade, of course, that U.S. large cap really was the dominant force, and technology within that was probably the dominant force in markets versus the decade prior, which was, you know, Canadian small cap, mid cap companies and resource based with, you know, China entering the World Trade Organization in 2001. That kind of set the table for that decade. What comes up in this next decade? Well, there's some terms that people are using. One of them is the peak decade, and peak decade coming from 2020 to 2030 might be somewhat demographic. So you look right now in the aging populations across the globe. You have some, of course, that are in decline, Japan and a number of Eastern European countries with the declining age or declining population. But there are now, you know, more seniors or age 65 and older versus age 5 and under. And as you go through the decade, that'll continue to increase, where age 65 and older will be in greater number than those 14 and younger, and so on. And so that's something that'll certainly change the dynamics of different economies and certainly lifestyles. Other things that might be a peak decade that come up might be the number of vehicles on the road. We look at light-duty vehicle gas consumption in North America. That peaks in a couple of years and flatlines after that. Globalization is probably one big theme that will change, and maybe has changed already to some degree. We spent the past 40 years in this world entering a more globalized world, more connectivity, more interconnected, human capital, financial capital, technology. In the last couple of years, we've seen a bit more of a deglobalization where, you know, countries are and governments are certainly looking to, you know, keep things within their own borders, I suppose, and, you know, not be as enthralled, I guess, with being part of the global order, if you want to call it that. And good, bad, or otherwise, you know, whether that's, you know, China-U.S. trade wars or things like Brexit and Britain exiting the European Union, that, you know, is some, I guess, sights of signs and ways of deglobalization. And whether that is something that actually takes hold or not, who knows. And other things like even demand for oil growth is you know, certainly quite strong through 2025, but certainly is probably a noticeable shift after that. And up until 2040, of course, is maybe the peak of that too. Who knows? But those are some of the probably the same main topics that they talk about within that peak decade coming up. Just other themes that we're going to quickly throw out there. I think one thing that is changing too is what they refer to ESG investing, or ESG, which is environmental, social, governance. And that's a trend that's starting to take hold. It's been more so in the sovereign funds over the last number of years, but it's becoming more on the institutional side as well, where they're looking at companies. It's not being green funds by any means, but it is something where they are looking at companies and rating them just the same as they would for their earnings or cash flows or revenues, but they're evaluating their environmental impact, their social and corporate governance, right? And it just means that they'll focus a bit more energies on ensuring and looking at companies that try to encompass those aspects of their corporation and their governance. And it's not, like you said, they would necessarily not invest in them, but they would assign essentially risk factors to those kind of companies and perhaps not invest in certain ones, but they're certainly going to be evaluating them going forward. And the other thing is like technology, I think will continue to expand rapidly, and the 5G that's coming down the road is going to change things dramatically by the amount of data and speed that it can move. Data is going to be far, far different than what we experience today. And then the last thing I was going to touch on a little bit was coronavirus, which we've had a couple people call in about that. And just, you know, I think the one thing to point out there is the coronavirus, of course, is like a number of other viruses that have occurred through the world and impacted, I guess, markets or economies at different points in time. So from Zika to SARS to Asian swine flu years back, I mean, there's a number of them that have come and gone. Certainly, this is something to be aware of. And at the end of the day, of course, you know, there's certainly more people that pass away from the regular flu, I guess, than these viruses that come out. But these viruses do have an impact. And so I would view that probably in two respects. I think you see that on the industrial and manufacturing side. And so one part of that would be, for instance, China, which is the epicenter of it all, of course, has quarantined a number of different cities and ports and so on. So now right now they're importing 3 million barrels of oil less per day than they were prior. Importing, of course, lots or fewer base metals and industrial metals that are typically used for manufacturing. So you've seen the prices of copper plummet. You've seen the rates for Baltic shipping to, again, plummet as well, basically to record lows, because all these container ships and ports are basically sitting idle. Now, on the industrial side, those are things that, you know, again, countries like China, whatever else, could certainly rely on their storage capacities and deal with any shortfalls in deliveries. And somewhere along the line, they can make up for that. So as things get cleared up, okay, they can enhance and increase the shipping and importing of what they are missing over the last couple of weeks or month, whatever it might end up being. Where it probably has a bit more impact would be maybe service industries. And so, which would tend to be more localized, but you can imagine, for instance, like a Starbucks or equivalent in China, where, you know, the person would come in every day for their coffee and go off to work or whatever it might be, and they're under quarantine for a week. Well, all of a sudden, you know, you got 7 days of no sales. And so when it does open up again, well, that individual doesn't come in there and buy 7 cups of coffee. They still come and buy one, and away they go. And so that's just lost sales. That's lost time. It's like a Canadian golf course who only has so many days to operate, and if you're rained out for a week, well, you don't get those days back. And so on the service industry side, that can certainly have a bit more of an impact economically, but again, far more localized. So I just wanted to touch on that. Obviously, things can change based on how the virus is contained or not contained. But at this point, it certainly hasn't impacted financial markets that dramatically. You know, we've seen some market volatility based on it, but generally the trends are still up. So moving on to really our fourth quarter and what we're talking about here now and in the past 3 months, it ended the year for 2019 quite on a positive note, especially through the month of November, which really drove the gains through that quarter. I mean, across the board, Canadian, U.S., European indexes were all up and quite healthy through this year in particular, maybe to the surprise of some. But again, following on a year in 2018 where, of course, we were in negative territory based on that last quarter of 2018. I think some things that helped to drive markets even a little bit further was, of course, that phase one of the China-U.S. trade deal. Not that that trade deal provided a lot of main contingency points, I guess, or dispute issues. It was at least illustrating that they were willing to work together, which is probably the biggest thing. You know, and of course, Brexit was passed, and not that that was a negative or positive to the markets, because it's been on the table for 3 years now at least, but the decision was finally made. And so, like most markets, they do like certainty. So whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, they like to know, okay, this is happening, this is the direction it's going, and everyone can move forward and then deal with it. With Britain in particular, of course, the next 11 months is the most challenging because that's the time frame they got to deal with renegotiating a number of trade deals with Canada, U.S., Europe, and whatever, and European trade is their biggest partner. So for them to deal with that is probably the biggest thing that's on the table. You know, specifically to the sectors, of course, technology is probably one of the biggest sectors that have provided most gains even through the last number of years, not just this past quarter or past year. And technology, of course, is really becoming more or bigger and bigger in all of our lives in different ways. And again, as I mentioned, 5G is going to change that even further. And it'll continue to be a dominant force within investment markets and certainly in different economies. Healthcare was probably a bit of a laggard in Canada in particular. I think just a bit of a more of a pullback on the cannabis market space in particular. Otherwise, like I said, most sectors were quite positive and, like I said, finished off the year quite well. So when we come to interest rates, and that's something, again, as I mentioned before, was kind of a maybe surprise this past decade to most economists in the sense of how low they remained for so long. I don't really see that changing. I think going forward, it's still going to be a low interest rate environment. Couple things, I suppose. I mean, there is still, to some degree, a global savings glut in that respect. And for a lot of these bond markets right now, especially the government bonds, I mean, most of or a number of these economies and European countries in particular, and Japan in particular, still have negative rate yields. Not substantial, but they're negative rate. And that makes it a challenging environment, of course, for retirees. And even in the U.S. markets, for instance, a 10-year government bond is still trading at a 1.5% yield. And so if you really look at that compared to after inflation, well, you're flat or probably negative 0.5%. And that makes it a challenge for investors and, like I said, retirees. And so you look at also how that ties into equity markets. Well, you know, first off, that obviously moves a lot of investors from perhaps safer governments to more corporate and high-yield bond markets. It also moves more investors to dividend-paying shares or equity markets and risk assets or alternatives, whether it's real estate or hedge funds and that kind of thing, because everyone's seeking yield, right? And it certainly doesn't pay on the interest rate side. So certainly great for borrowers, but again, still a challenge for retirees and certainly a challenge for investors and our managers trying to find yield without taking on too much substantial or risk at all. Inflation, which is kind of, you know, tied to interest rates to some degree. They use interest rates, obviously, to fight or combat inflation. Inflation really has been, you know, it's achieved, I guess, that lower threshold, that 2% level for most central banks of what they want to see. But even that has been a struggle to get it up beyond that mark. And that's been, you know, I guess a couple things that impact that on, you know, mainly, I suppose, technology. Technology is, by its very nature, deflationary. Obviously, it creates a lot of efficiencies and so on, but it is kind of a deflationary type of market space. So inflation, of course, is certainly good, and low inflation especially good in the sense of it does not eat away at your purchasing power as much as time goes by. But I think more of the other concern for central banks is deflation, right? And so right now they're quite happy to see that 2% and hopefully it holds there. And time will tell, I guess, whether or not that can sustain itself. It might become a bit of a struggle if we end up in a slowing economy, which we are generally. I mean, it's still positive growth in most areas. There are certain spots where economic growth is negative or trending downwards, like Germany in particular. But like I said, globally, growth is still strong enough to keep inflation at a reasonable level. Where, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some adjustments. Just going back to the coronavirus topic, I mean, that will probably adjust some global growth in some respects. Again, more so probably in China in particular. But China is a big part of the global trade nowadays, and so it does filter down to North America and to Europe and other parts of Asia as well, too. So where that ends up, we will see. Currency-wise, we've seen the dollar kind of be pretty steady from at least the Canadian-U.S. perspective to in that 75, 76 cent range. I don't expect to see any really drop in that exchange rate. If nothing else, there's probably some incentive for that Canadian dollar to appreciate against the U.S., you know, even just marginally. I wouldn't expect any big changes at this point in time. But it's probably a trend that would probably stay fairly steady. I think most, I think the U.S. itself would like to see its own dollar probably depreciate a little bit. But again, it is still the be-all, end-all, I guess, of global trade as in U.S. dollars, and it's always the safe haven currency and continues to be so. Commodities, I'll just touch on that quickly. It was a good year for gold, in particular this past year. Again, maybe a bit of a safe haven. Also, the fact that gold really was stagnant for a number of years now and hadn't moved much since its last peak in 2011, other than downwards. Other metals, I think, that have had a really good run this past year was palladium and platinum in particular, more so for demand, right? They are used lots in car manufacturing, of course, and those prices have risen accordingly. On the industrial metal side, again, we've seen the extremes of copper and some of the iron ore base metals that have as of late, struggled under the quarantine and coronavirus issues in China. But with slowing economies, you do see a bit of price pressure downwards on those kind of metals. Oil and gas, oil in particular, of course, over the last week or two now, of course, has struggled again with really no imports or not much for imports going into China. So that's impacted the short-term spot price. Longer term, or at least through the calendar year, I think the expectation of a $60 barrel of oil is still in the sights of most economists, and I think that would be fair to say, based on current demand and supply that's out there. At the end of the day, there's still probably not a sizable amount of upside for oil over the next few years, even still. I mean, there's enough supply out there that can meet demand. And I think what would impact that is, in a slowing economy that we do have, how lower is growth going, and at what point does that bottom out and growth start increasing again? And I think the expectation is right now that growth will slow down a little bit through this year and find its kind of shallow point and then carry on. And certainly there is some talk of recession, but I don't know if I would say that there's going to be a full-fledged recession in this current year. If it does, it'd be towards the tail end of this 2020, but I would say more than anything else, it's going to be very shallow, where it's not really a true recession from the metric standpoint. It might be just where aggregate demand is enough that it makes it feel like a recession, and then things pick up from there. Certainly in a U.S. election year, it is rare, I guess, that you ever see any economic slowdown of any kind in an election year like this. So certainly the central banks will be doing all they can to ensure that economies continue to function the way they want them to, and managing growth expectations as they can. And so on the outlook side, I think that's part of what we would expect to see in the current year. As a whole, certainly there's going to be probably a bit more volatility. You know, Canada as a whole is probably one market that's still undervalued. Not that I would expect to see Canada lead the market or indices in this current year necessarily, but it is still an undervalued market. Certainly markets as a whole are quite fairly priced. Upside is really dependent on, I think, earnings and select companies that perhaps are still undervalued or that have increasing earnings and revenues. I think as a whole, we're still a bit more overweight to the international market space, and that's probably where the best opportunities are going forward at this point in time. And I think probably the greatest thing that we're expecting, and for what investors to expect, is at the end of the day, in this kind of market space, I think the investments are coming down to where more active management is really key. Security selection is key, asset allocation, and just diversification. You know, it's like I said, when you get markets that are near all-time highs or keep pushing all-time highs, again, it's not that they are vastly overpriced, but it is going to give rise to certain pullbacks. And if that happens, or when that happens, owning the right securities is really going to be a value and benefit, and that's where probably more value growth equities is probably more in favor right now than the growth equities. And there is a difference between the two and the two styles of investing, and that's certainly where I think our managers are more focused here today, besides being a bit more defensive in cash or gold and so on. They are looking at certainly more security selection and asset allocation as being key to these markets in this current year going forward. So I'll leave it at that. That was a little bit quicker and a bit more information, maybe typical, but I hope you enjoyed the call here today. And if you do have any questions, certainly feel free to call into the office, and any of us advisors can certainly speak to you directly. Thank you for joining us, and hope you join us next time around. Bye for now.